Hello, and welcome to Time for a Story, Scary Stories from a Small Town in Maine. Season 4, Chapter 4, H is for Headlights. But all this time you're half afraid. Paul Buchanan. Dr. Karen's heart sank. The driveway was dark, and worse still, so was the house. This makes no sense, she thought, picturing herself just that morning double-checking against precisely the scenario. She looked down the street to see if the blackness was because of a power outage. No, it was just her place. Now what? The winds had intensified, whipping up the reins and mangling visibility. Stay in the car, it all seemed to say. Years of responding to emergencies in every kind of weather imaginable had pulled her out of bed and into lots of nights like this. Being preoccupied with the safety of a patient, however, she had never given it a second thought. Now, it was just her trying to get into her own house. The car engine idled as she stared straight ahead, willing the lights to turn themselves back on. The house looked so far away, an unobtainable distance. Amelia reached behind the passenger seat and grabbed her leather backpack. If she was going out there, she'd want her house key in one hand and the dipper van in the other. She felt around for the small white box at the bottom of her pack and pulled it out. The one remaining dose of the sedative rolled softly from side to side, a stark reminder that the other 7 doses had already been used on Abram White. She picked up the syringe carefully and held it in her hand. It felt heavy. If something is waiting for me in the yard, I'll be ready. Going over all the steps, the process of visualizing herself moving toward the entranceway, unlocking the door, and reaching for the light switch, it would have been a red flag to her old self. Her old self would have seen all of this as mental illness, as proof that she was coming unglued. Then she remembered how it felt to touch Abram. His body had been ice cold, like a corpse, and yet he breathed. It's the world that's going crazy, not me, she assured herself. Her vehicle's headlights illuminated the driveway and bounced off the entrance to her house. Like a protective corridor, the beam cut a path through the storm. Her plan was to walk within the light up to the side stoop. All she had to do was make it to the door, and then she'd be safe inside. Another thought. Wait a minute. How long will the headlights stay on once I turn the car off? She reached into the glove compartment and fumbled for the owner's manual. H is for headlights, she told herself while leafing through the booklet for the answer to her question. Clearly, she was stalling, and the winds worried. Just leave the car running, Amelia. I'll just leave the car running, she said, as if in response. She had considered skipping all of this and heading directly to Ed's, but she had 8 loaded needles of the sedative in her nightstand. She could see the white box in her mind's eye, and there was no way she was going to Ed's without that box. Ah, hell this, she barked. She placed the syringe between her teeth, just like she had seen Abram's father do, and then she grabbed her house key. The sheriff had driven by Amelia's house twice already. Both times, she was not there. He had just circled the town grocery store when his cell phone rang. It was Ed D'Angelo. "What do you need, Ed?" Nathan still wasn't sure how he felt about the doctor's assistant. "I have to tell you something about my daughter." Nathan pulled over in front of the ice cream shack, now boarded up for the season. He put the SUV in park.
"Go ahead. I'm listening."
Born with a black heart, ruthless in her refusal to love anything but herself, estranged for years, and then murdered. These were the building blocks of Ed's story, the story of his daughter. What Ed relayed was more than what any father should have to bear, but he told it all to Nathan in a way that made it clear he was done crying about it. He was all business now. When the groundwork had been laid, Ed delivered the one final tidbit that he had been working toward. "She's one of them, like Abram."
"How do you know this, Ed?"
"I saw her. I saw her in the morgue. Yes, she was absolutely in the morgue, no doubt about it. And then she started coming to the house, been happening for weeks. That part I wasn't so sure of until Dr. Karen saw her at the house. And that at least proves I'm not insane. Well, no, it proves I'm not hallucinating. That's all it proves." Sheriff Randall wanted Ed to stop talking, to stop sharing. "Coming to the house? What do you mean by coming to the house?" His tone was incredulous.
"I mean, Samantha comes at night, calls my name, whispers to me from the shadows, from outside my bedroom window, which is on the second floor."
The sheriff took a breath, as though he were about to say something, but then nothing followed. Words were not forming. Ed filled the void with more information. Abram found her in Boston, and then he did to her what had been done to him. Samantha, I'm calling it Samantha, but it's not Samantha. Anyway, I think Samantha killed the man at the marina. The sheriff could feel his anger surge. Ed should have told him all of this before. But hadn't Ed also warned him that this was coming? He wanted to blame Ed, but Ed already had a head start on the blame game. "I'm speaking what feels like gibberish, like a script from some nonsensical movie. It's not possible, but it's true. All of what I've told you is true. And this all started because Clyde White was a coward. He could have stopped all of this, should have seen his son for what he was, should have killed the boy when he had the chance." Ed could feel the last sentence staring back at him in disgust. He was wrong to judge, and he knew it. What could be said of him about denial and false hope, about blind devotion? Hadn't he always known the truth about his own child? But it was too late. His words were out there now, and they had every intention of keeping score, of holding him accountable. Nathan was done listening. "I've tried calling Amelia. I keep getting her voicemail. Where is she, Ed?"
"She was headed home to pack some things before coming back here, where I can protect her."
"Ed, she's not home."
"What's the matter, Dr. Karen? Afraid of the dark?"
The voice was chilling and way too close. She had only just made it to the door, had only just lifted the house key. The owner of the voice had been waiting for her the whole time. Of course it was. Terror is a two-sided line. It is run or fight, live or die. Adrenaline is about running. Norepinephrine and cortisol are about being ready. And the powerful hormone rush is hard to overcome. Run or fight. A voice in the dark, a wet whisper in an ear, that's all it takes. The body assesses in only fractions of a second what it will do, what it can do. It's not about choice anymore, because instincts are driving the bus, and God willing, there will be a happy ending a few stops down. But there are people for whom running is not an option. Their training will not give credence to the electric zing of fear. For these people, the line is something to step over, a distraction from good thinking. The split-second transition between obsessing about something beyond your control and finally being in the moment of action is like a hissing pressure valve, like a trapdoor out of a room stuffed with overthinking. For Amelia Ann Karen, M.D., the relief was instantaneous. She took the syringe from her lips and she spun around. "Afraid of the dark, you ask?" Dr. Karen was a natural. She would keep the conversation going for as long as possible. She couldn't do anything until she could see the target. "Why not come toward me, where I can see you?"
"Oh, I'm thinking about it."
The spittle-spattle of words came from something deformed, something crooked and slippery.
"I've seen you at my father's house. What business could you have there, I do wonder? Maybe the good doctor is playing in Daddy's deep pockets?"
Dr. Karen ignored the insult. "Samantha, you could go anywhere. Why come back here?" She lifted the syringe in her fist, poised to strike. Beyond the whir of the rain and wind, Amelia could no longer hear the soft hum of her car. It had stopped. She hadn't thought about the possibility of someone shutting off the car. She could picture the owner's manual in her head now. 90 seconds. I've got 90 seconds before the headlights go out. Then, a new distraction, an intense pressure on her face, just under her eyes. The pain was incredible, like a smothering. Amelia did her best to ignore it as she scanned the area just off the stoop. Still, no Samantha. She stayed pressed against the house with her back to the door. Any second now, she would lose the light, lose her advantage. She had to lure Samantha forward. "Your dad, he called you Sammy, didn't he? I've heard so much about you." The doctor's eyes were watering. The pain was excruciating.
"You're techniquing me, aren't you, doctor?"
Samantha sneered, and the sound worked its way over Amelia, pulling at her hair like a claw.
"It's above me. Oh, God, it's right above me."
Amelia had only been looking forward. She hadn't thought to look overhead. In an explosion of sound, Nathan's SUV cruiser was on the scene, chewing its way across the front yard like a battle tank, and it was headed straight for them. The interruption was the lifeline Amelia needed. She fell backward off the small wooden landing and onto the crushed rock of her driveway.
"Don't lose sight of her! Don't lose sight of her!"
Amelia could picture the old flagman on the road, unprotected. She could not let Samantha get away. Looking down over the doctor was a 30-something woman with long hair and stylish clothing, but she was also gray and gaunt, sickly-looking, her mouth oddly distorted. This was Ed's monster. For Samantha, the commotion meant a change of plans, but so? Why not linger in the light for a few seconds longer? Nobody could find her, nobody could stop her. She arched her back outward and stared straight ahead into the high beams of the oncoming SUV. The darkness had cautioned her against hubris, had urged her to stay hidden until their numbers were greater. Samantha was tired of being told what to do, and besides, the darkness was wrong. Samantha was a shadow, and shadows can do as they please. Two soulless eyes looked down at the doctor and then back up at the sheriff who was running toward them. The shadow still had time.
"You're all going to die," she said, as if revealing a punchline.
Dr. Karen was lying on the ground, her right fist still holding the dipper van in a death grip. She would not look back, would not take her gaze off the spot where Samantha was.
"Get up! Get closer!"
she tried, willing herself to move.
"Amelia!"
Nathan hollered, not sure if the doctor was seeing what he was seeing. As he approached, Samantha pulled in tight against the house, fusing with the darkness and the driving rain. Amelia yelled back,
"Get back in the cruiser! She's here!"
H is for Headlights, written and performed by Bridget Emmons. Follow me on Instagram and visit my website at bridgetemmons.com. Thank you for listening.